Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Movie Podcast. My name is Daniel. I am one of your hosts today. And joining alongside me on the sands of Arrakis, it's Anthony. Hello, Anthony.
Hello. It's quite hot out here.
It's very warm today, but we're not alone because we are joined by a very, very special guest who we're going to introduce to you very, very soon. Don't worry about the name of the episode. Anthony, how are you doing today?
I am doing as well as a sand mouse. Are they called sand mouses?
The sand mouse, yeah.
Muad'Dib, right?
Muad'Dib.
But yeah. I like to give him an English name.
Okay.
So I'm going to call him Sand Mouse.
Sand Mouse.
I'm doing as well as a sand mouse on Arrakis.
I like that. You know, they're strong. They create their own water. They're good animals to name yourself
they're
after.
They're so small. Like, you crush them.
No, don't do that, man.
Even though they're creating their own water.
Yeah.
Minute to whatever lives in the desert,
right? I mean, compare them to the ocean of sand out there. Yeah, of course. Yeah. But no, it's great. I mean, I'm so happy to be talking about Dune. If we haven't spoken about Dune enough, we have a lot more Dune for you today, because joining us on the Movie Podcast is our very special guest. It's someone who we've been wanting to have on the show for a very, very long time, Greg Fraser. And not just Greg Fraser, Academy Award-winning Greg Fraser, because he has shot some of the most beautiful-looking films in the last decade plus. I'm talking about films like Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, Lion, Dune, The Batman, The Creator, and now Dune Part 2. I want to say a huge thank you to our friends at Warner Brothers for inviting us to watch the film and to partake in this interview. This was really a huge highlight for us.
Yeah, like, this is someone we've been actively trying to get on the show for a very long time, especially since, you know, the Batman is such a big part of our life. And after watching the Batman and then seeing Dune and then Dune 2 and then all his other works like Killing Them Softly
or The Mandalorian, right?
Or Rogue One.
And yeah.
Just, you know, Darth Vader sequence at the end. That's such a powerful shot movie at that, like, you just want this guy to be on your show.
Yeah,
because he is the next Roger Deakins.
Yeah, he really is. And I, you know, something I always think about is when Roger Deakins last year was talking about the nominees for best cinematography and how Greg Fraser for The Batman shot the best looking film last year, and The Batman was the best looking film last year.
Yeah,
and for him to not get a nomination after having just won for Dune, it's wild. And you think of the advances that Greg Fraser has done with working with Stagecraft and The Volume. It's truly incredible. And yeah, we're just absolutely delighted to be speaking with him. We'll be having him on very, very soon for a great conversation. Don't worry, we don't get into any spoilers of the film, so if you have not watched it yet, make sure you check out our review to hear if it's good. I have a feeling it's a really good movie, if you couldn't tell.
Yeah, I would give it a 10 out of 10.
I'd give it a 10 out of 10 too. Real gem. Spoiler for our review, though. But this is the Movie Podcast. You can catch brand new episodes all throughout the week with interviews and reviews and discussions on all the latest movies and features. If you want to follow us on socials, you can at The Movie Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Letterboxd, wherever you are, we're there. Check out our show notes below for all of those links and more, as well as some really great partners for this episode for sponsors, Factor Meals. You can get 50% off. Check out our show notes for that, as well as all the other places to follow us, like Discord, and if you want to watch a video version of this interview. Now, Dune Part 2 is now playing in theaters. You could go see it today, and we highly recommend that you do, because it is an incredible, incredible film. Anthony, before we dive into our interview with Greg, any special moments that you want to tease for the audience to get excited about
from this interview?
Yes.
I think it's learning a lot about who Greg is. I think the ending is a big part of it. And that's not me saying stay to the end. It's more of like, oh, I didn't know this until you told me, Daniel, until I learned it. And Greg was talking about it as like, this is actually where I started. This was my first passion. And then, you know, this is now my second passion.
Yeah. And
as vague as that can
as
be.
As vague as you could be.
We want you to stay to the end.
Yeah. No, we want you to stay to the end. Please stay to the end. It helps us out a lot. But also, I mean, like, hearing him talk about this film and working with Denis and how they shot, you know, the Getty Prime sequence with Austin Butler and the work that went into those scenes, it really is incredible. And you see why he is the best cinematographer in the business right now. And it makes sense why it's hard to get him on the show, because this guy is working. This guy's always working. He's going to start working on the Batman Part 2 soon. There's lots to look forward to from Greg, and we're just so delighted that he is here. So without further ado, please welcome Academy Award winning cinematographer Greg Fraser to the Movie Podcast.
Hey, Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, guys. How's it going? Happy to always talk about this amazing movie. I've been so excited about this film since I graded it, you know, a few months ago and saw it in IMAX for the first time. And I've kind of had to keep my mouth shut because the only person I can talk to about it has been the about my collaborators, you know, my designer and director and VFX supervisor and my crew. So the fact that I can talk to you guys about it, it's pretty cool.
We're just so delighted and congratulations again. It truly is a masterwork. We've seen it twice now, and both times where we've just been blown away.
I'm excited that you have seen it twice. Have you seen it in IMAX? I haven't seen it.
Both times in IMAX.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's cool, isn't it?
It's very... It's
super cool.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
You know, of course. My gosh. You know, we have to ask you, of course, you're reteaming with The Neon Part 2. We'd love if you could talk to us about your chemistry with one another and how you wanted to approach a sequel to Dune.
It's a great question because we talked at length about what number two was going to be. You know, when we realized that it was going to happen, because of course you never really want to, I don't know, in the film business, it's tricky. You don't want to plan unknowns. You know, when things aren't 100% confirmed, you kind of want to talk in code. You don't really, I'm not superstitious, but it's a weird thing where you don't really want to talk about a part two. When it started to become a reality, we started to talk about it seriously and go, right, well, how are we going to do this? And, you know, I think that's where the rubber kind of hits the road, where, you know, up to that point, we never really had to shoot a sandwater writing sequence. Like, we never really had to kind of do all these things. We never really had to see the siege. Like, we were like, well, we're not seeing the siege. We don't have to solve that problem. But then when part two became a reality, we went, okay, here's the reality. Okay, we have to steal Leah. We have to ride on a sandwater. We have to attack, we have to attack the Emperor using sandworms. I mean, it's like, how the hell do we do that? And that was the time where we started to get real about, okay, how do we actually do this? And what techniques will we use? You know, the sandworm writing sequence was probably one of the first things we tackled because clearly Paul has to learn how to ride a sandworm, and we couldn't do it. We couldn't shoot it the same way that we shot the sandworm riding on part one, which was on a long lens, a long way away. You know, the Fremen at the end of the movie. So we acknowledged that was successful, but we couldn't do that with Paul. We had to be with Paul. So we started to map out, you know, what that would look like and how we would actually go about shooting that. And, you know, we couldn't really find reference of any other sandworm riding. So I can't. No. So, you know, we looked at a myriad of things. We looked at water skiing videos, we looked at surfing videos, like, you know, tons of these references that I pulled out and said, all right, how do we shoot a surfer? How do we shoot a water skier? How do we do these things? How do we shoot a skier and be with them? And we came up with a plan. We came up with a strategy.
And it looks absolutely incredible. And we just want to dive into it more with you for sure.
Thank you. You know, one of my favorite shots in that sequence, and it's so funny, isn't it? Like, I love that sequence, and I've seen the edit, of course, 1,000 times because I graded it. You know, but when I grade it, I don't normally grade with sound or music. I grade without that because it, you know, I can focus on the images.
Interesting.
But the first time I turned the sound on after having graded that sequence, you know, that there's one shot in that I love. Denise's shot is the shot where it's from behind Paul and he stands up, and it's just him just getting air as he stands up from behind. My favorite shot's the next one where we're profile with him. It's almost like we're riding another sandworm. That's our theory. Yeah. We're on another sandworm, like a tracking sandworm, let's call it, with a long lens, and we're tracking with him as he stands up. And there's amazing Zimmer beat, like there's an amazing Zimmer kind of music punch that absolutely is mind blowing. And I punch the air every time that happens. Like every time I see that in the cinema, which is now a dozen times, I'm like, yeah, go Paul. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
We got to talk about IMAX. It plays such a huge role in Dune Part 2, especially during the opening sequence on Arrakis. How did the larger aspect ratio help you tell a more immersive story?
Well, we discovered we knew we wanted to be in IMAX, even on part one, obviously, because we knew that we wanted to tell Paul's story through an expanded world. We wanted to open his world, you know, and the same way that people have expressed, you know, people going to a new location for the first time and opening their world, we wanted to do that with a format, and we could do that with IMAX. And so we decided that on part two, like, the film for the most part is immersion, and there's a lot of action and there's a lot of immersion. And we loved how the scene on part one played, you know, the rescue from the spice harvester, of, you know, where Paul almost gets sucked in and they fly out over it. We loved the way that played out in IMAX. For us, that was, I think that exceeded our expectations of IMAX. You know, I think for us that we went, that's a really successful scene. And it, for us, we loved it. As film nerds, we just loved the way that played out. And so we went, well, listen, this film starts with an action sequence, you know, and but it then cuts into to a lot of drama with these actors. And so we went, well, I think we can play most of this movie in 4:3, or a lot of this movie in 4:3, and then, you know, a bit of 1:90. So it became like, well, why not do the whole film like that? And we did, I think it was the right call, because, like you said, it becomes immersive, and it's an incredible experience, IMAX, because they push this idea of immersion, and it is absolutely true. And you get into the action, you get into the drama, you get into the love story, you get into all the minutiae of the filmmaking through IMAX, it's through an immersive larger format, you know. And yeah, I think that's really important.
It's so important. And we're also thinking of the sequence of when we're introduced to Austin Butler's Fade Rothera during that Colosseum battle on Getty Prime. You know, we're introduced to like a more of a monochromatic color scheme. What went into like building the look of those scenes?
Well, so that's an interesting one, because Denis was, you know, as you know, the June part one had a really successful awards season, which was fantastic, but it was also, you know, it meant that we were, our prep was littered with events and other things. So Denis was writing in between, you know, events. And he came to me, I think, one day and said, "Hey, listen, I'm in the process of writing the Fade battle." And he said, "You know, because I want to, you know, the sun on Getty Prime has to be different to the sun on Arrakis, because we're going from one to the other and we're outside, you know, and how do we make it different?" And then he said, "Like, should we make it black and white? Is the sun different? Is it this? Is it that there?" And I was like, "Denis, I've got the perfect solution. I've been playing with infrared on digital cameras for the last sort of 10 years from Zero Dark 30, actually, when I was lighting with infrared light. And, you know, I'd used it a few times for VFX passes on Rogue One, and I did a test and said to him, we can get rid of all the visible light and shoot just with infrared light. And this is what it does to skin tones, what it does to the pupils, to the iris. You know, I said, we could shoot this thing inside and everybody looks like they're in the dark, but we can see them clearly, you know." And we tested that, and that wasn't as interesting as us being outside in the real sun. And seeing what it does to the Harkonnen. But for me, what's great about that is that it actually shows, if you understand that in Getty Prime, you don't see visible light, you only got this kind of this infrared glow off everybody, you kind of understand why they look the way they look. You know, you understand why they have no hair and why they're so pale. Like, you kind of get it that there's no sun in Getty Prime. The sun is like an anti-sun. It's a black sun. So, yeah, you kind of get that. So, I don't know. That was a fun, interesting testing process to get to that point.
Yeah, and it looks like visually it's stunning. And, you know, obviously seeing it in IMAX and really changing the feel of the film, because we're, you know, getting introduced to Austin Butler's character, who is terrifying in this. So, it was a really cool way to introduce him.
Yeah, thanks. I'm really pleased that I got to better use this infrared thing that I've been playing with, you know, because, I haven't really used it to that effect before. So it seemed like the perfect solve to Denis' great idea of this kind of sun that doesn't have any color thing. Definitely. And I was like, perfect, here we go. We can do it literally where the camera can't record the color, because right. there is no color. It can just record infrared.
Greg, you and Josh Brolin developed a strong bond with one another while filming Dune Part 1 and Part 2. How did your collaboration on Dune exposures come to be?
So, you know, Denis asked me super early during the prep process if I'd be interested in just taking some photos, because, you know, I'm an ex-photographer and, you know, he'd seen some of the photos that I'd been taking, you know, on my film camera. And I was just noodling around with things. And, you know, I haven't worked as a professional photographer in a number of years because I've been too busy. But so he said to me, he goes, like, do you want to capture and record the making of Dune? Because I love your photographs and I'd love to have your photographs record this process. And my first reply back was, listen, I'm really worried about doing a good job on this. Like, this to me is, I have to succeed at Dune and... you know, doing, and I, you know, I said, I'll do it, but only if it's not for any PR or it's any publishing. I'm not thinking about documenting the process. There's no conscious need for me to take photos. Like, I'm not doing it for any reason whatsoever. And he was like, yeah, cool. He said, you know, if we end up with a couple of shots at the end for our coffee table, for our, you know, whatever. So I did it, and I started shooting some really great stuff, and I found it to be a really interesting process where it meant that I could step back from a scene and not see the scene the way I would ordinarily see it. And I actually think it helped me understand the light and the scene. Instead of distracting me, it actually helped me, believe it or not. And along the way, you know, I showed a few people on set as we went along, and I showed, you know, Brolin, and because, you know, I was reading some amazing stuff he was writing on Instagram, and I was coming to work the next day and going, dude, when did you write that thing? Like, it's amazing, because I'm a strong fan of literature and beautiful writing, and he is an amazing writer. So we kind of riffed on each other's work for a while, and then Tanya, who's the EP and producer on the movie, kind of recommended and said, hey, why don't you guys do a thing together? And so there you go. That was how it started. And you know what? I love it, because what it means is the photography is not defined by just the photography. It's defined by as much by the words that accompany it as it does by the images. And it made me realize what it is I love about filmmaking, which is my images do not stand alone by themselves. They are improved and enhanced by people who are skilled in other areas. Like that Hans Zimmer example I gave you before, like that shot of Paul standing up, it's a great shot. I will say I'd love it by itself, but it wasn't until I saw the Zimmer power, and in conjunction with Joe Walker's edit, in conjunction with Denise's direction, that I just went fist pump, you know, air pump. So it's those things where you go, Josh's words, I think, enhance my photography, and hopefully my photography enhance his words together. So it's a team thing. That's what I love about filmmaking.
It truly is. Greg, we are so grateful for your time. You are absolutely incredible. We cannot wait to see what you get to work on next. We're such huge fans of yours, and thank you so much again.
Thanks, guys. Awesome to chat to you. Really fun.
Thank you so much. Hope to, again, see you.
Okay. Thanks, ciao. Thanks, guys.